So good evening, everybody. My name is Eddie, and I'm one of the tutors at Lagwitangpa Centre. And this evening, we're going through a program called Transforming Problems into Happiness. And this is our fourth class. So we're engaged in the study of Dharma, and it's important that you be comfortable with your posture and having a comfortable mind. So if you like, just adjust your posture. This means make sure that you have a straight back, your shoulders relaxed, that you're breathing normally and naturally. And I'd like you to notice the movements that take place either at the abdomen or the upper chest each time you inhale or exhale. So we're just feeling the movement of the breath. And then imagine if the spiritual lineage of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas came from the 10 directions of space and were present in the space above you. And that every sentient being were sitting around you. And you could recollect that we and they equally wish to avoid suffering. That everyone equally wishes to be happy. That equally everyone lacks genuine happiness. And that every one of these sentient beings is related to you as a parent, an uncle or aunt, a brother or a sister or child. And in these ever-changing relationships, they were always kind to you, and your happiness has always depended upon their kindness. And now they are relying upon you to find that genuine and authentic happiness that they seemingly lack. So to help them discover true sources of happiness and happiness itself, we'll take refuge in the families of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas above us, will generate the mind of enlightenment, recite the preliminary prayers, and offer a mandala to the merit field. And when we've done that, we'll recite the 8 verses of thought transformation. So taking refuge in generating bodhicitta, I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Now, stabilizing this wish and enhancing it, we recite the 4 immeasurables together. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Now, to achieve enlightenment for the benefit of others, we need to abandon different types of thought and behavior and adopt other forms of thought and behavior. These are all summed up in the seven limb prayers, so we'll recite that now. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginning this time and rejoice in the meritable whole in ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. So now we come to make the offering of a mandala to the merit field in front of us. So if we think that the essence of this is the is just let go. And what we're letting go here is the clinging to our ideas, our body, and our merit. So think in the absence of that clinging, wonderful pure land opens up where all beings can take the teachings of the Buddha. So this ground, anointed with perfumes, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this is a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamna Yataya. So we make the offering and it is accepted by the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and they smile at us in delight. Then the from the central figure of Buddha, the replica leaves his heart, comes to sit above the crown of our head, and leads us in a supplication to the merit field. So determined to obtain the greatest possible benefit from all sentient beings, or more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel, I shall hold the most dear at all times. When in the company of others, I shall always consider myself the lowest of all, and from the depths of my heart hold others dear and supreme. Vigilant the moment a delusion appears in my mind, endangering myself and others, I shall confront and avert it without delay. Whenever I see beings who are wicked in nature and overwhelmed by violent negative actions and suffering, I shall hold such rare ones dear, as if I had found a precious treasure. When out of envy others mistreat me with abuse, insults or the like, I shall accept defeat and offer the victory to others. When someone whom I have benefited and in whom I have great hopes gives me terrible harm, I shall regard that person as my holy guru. In short, both directly and indirectly, do I offer every happiness and benefit to all my mothers. I shall secretly take upon myself all their harmful actions and suffering. Undefiled by the stains of the superstitions of the eight worldly concerns, may I, by perceiving all phenomena as illusory, be released from the bondage of attachment. Now the emanation of Buddha above the crown of our head, who is in essence our own teacher, dissolves into light and melts through the crown of your head and comes to rest at your heart. The light begins to expand, filling your body. The light goes further, going out through the pores of your skin into the 10 directions of space. And wherever they are sentient beings within that space, they are transformed into fully awakened, capable, enlightened beings. Think that their compassionate wisdom fills all of space and it is inseparable from your own wisdom. So there's no you or I, there's no Buddha and sentient being, there's no inner, no outer. All these conventions, conceptual constructs, and they've fallen away at this time. There's this vast, luminous, empty space, which is the nature of your own enlightened mind. And the light begins to withdraw from the 10 directions of space and re-enters your heart. And while you breathe normally and naturally, you can still sort of feel the warmth of that wisdom which is embodied. And you acknowledge that you have the potential to fully awaken and help others do the same. Because the nature of your mind, the deepest nature of your mind, is no different than the deepest nature of a fully awakened being. And while you continue to breathe normally and naturally, if your eyes are closed, then just gently allow them to open and bring your presence back into the room. And I'll open up our class and we'll begin the teaching. So we're on to, like I say, you can see here, up to class 4. And we've looked at these topics in the 3 previous classes. We looked at self-grasping, self-cherishing and cherishing others. We also looked at worldly concerns, equanimity, and we've covered 3 verses of the 8 verses of thought transformation. So the essence of that first verse was to cherish others. The essential message in the second verse is to enhance the mind that cherishes others. And last week, we looked at the 3rd verse, which is really about driving out the afflictions. Now, our teaching tonight is really on the destructive emotion of anger. And here we have a number of very good books that are very helpful. So we've got a first book up the top called Healing Anger. And this is the Dalai Lama's commentary on a text called The Bodhisattva's Way of Life. And in that text is a whole chapter on patience. So you can see the subheading of the book is The Power of Patience from a Buddhist Perspective. So His Holiness is commenting on Venerable Arishanti Deva's commentary on how to put an end to anger and how to use the different thought transformation techniques. The book's next to it, the Nectar of Manjushri speech, is another commentary on that chapter, but all of the book called Bodhisattva's Way of Life. These 2 other books here, I've drawn material from them tonight too. These are also 2 books by Dalai Lama with Venerable Thupten Chodron. Transforming the Heart is a commentary on the book called 37 Practices of Bodhisattvas. It's got an excellent section on thought transformation. And this book here, Emotions Revealed, written by a man called Paul Ekman. So he's the sort of world's foremost authority on emotions. And he's a very good relationship with the Dalai Lama. So this is really interesting to read. And you could learn a lot about your own emotions and how they came up and how they're expressed and so forth. Training the Mind is a commentary on 8 verses thought transformation, and this book called Good Karma is a commentary by Venerable Thupten Chodron on a text of thought transformation, also called, I think, The Wheel of Sharp Weapons. So in that, this book here has got tremendous techniques for using your understanding of karma to transform the attitude that you have about anger. There's a couple of other books that are not here, but I also relied upon them. And when you go up to have a look at the website, have a look at your student resources, there's material from these 2, from the other books in there. So one of them is called Open Heart, Clear Mind and Working with Anger. This is also by Venerable Thupten Chodron, and there's a lot of techniques in there that you could have a look at to work against anger. And there's another terrific book by 2 Australian psychologists called The Anger Fallacy. So we have these in the library, but you can also buy them from the bookshops. They're terrific because they really argue that whatever reasons you have to be angry, these people will come up and show you where you're wrong. So they're not Buddhists, like I said, they're psychologists. But what's interesting is reading it and you see, wow, that's what Shanti Deva said. So these are all, there are many resources that we can call upon to help us deal with anger. So we're talking about anger and its faults. We'll also look at the antidotes. And then we'll look at verse 4, which in its essence is to extend and deepen compassion. So here's like the compassion that understands that whenever we are angry, we will hurt ourselves for sure and quite likely hurt someone else. So compassion works against the anger. Compassion is this wish that no one suffer, and no one includes ourselves. So this verse is about that. It's actually sort of talking about the, going against anger, being an antidote to anger. Now, there are different there are different ways of looking at anger. Most times it's seen as being a negative, but it's not necessarily always the case. It really depends upon the context that we're using this word. So in speaking of positive and negative emotions, Buddhist psychology differentiates multiple meanings of the words. So for example, like attachment, fear, anger, and disillusionment have multiple meanings depending on the circumstances. So it's important to sort of distinguish the different forms of these emotions in order to avoid confusion. Now just a few things about anger, how it's most commonly seen in the presentation of the Buddha Dharma. So anger has is called a root affliction. It's called this because it's a primary cause. It is one of the primary causes of psychic existence. And it's also a root cause or an auxiliary cause of other afflictions. It acts as the basis for distorted ideas and emotional conflict. So brief, sort of anger arises based on projecting or exaggerating the unattractive qualities of an object or person. When it does this, it agitates the mind. This agitation takes place because the mind seems to be unable to bear feeling. And then it sort of wants to harm the object or person. Now, I'll say this now, right? The Buddha teaches, and what he's teaching is the suffering and its causes and the end of suffering and its causes. So he's really sort of teaching solutions to human problems based on the principle of causality. So when we get angry, there are sort of, 10 grounds for resentment, 10 grounds for to be angry. And these 10 are sort of broken up into three groups. First of all, we can get angry when others try to harm us. We can also get angry when others try to harm our friends and dear ones. And we can also get angry when others help or benefit those who are harming us or our friends. And we can get angry thinking about these events at present. We can think about it, things that have happened in the past, and we can be worried about these types of things happening in the future. We could be angry, in other words, considering ourselves being ourselves, our friends, our foes being benefited throughout the past, present, and future. If you multiply these together, you get sort of these nine. But there's one more as well. Buddha also says there's a type of anger called irrational anger. And this is when you get sort of just angry and there's no obvious reason. So you can see here, and this is just one way of dividing anger. There are other ways too, where you can sort of get 9 and 10. But I'll just point out this first one here, because we're going to look at two delusions called aversion and anger and see the relationship between them.
That list, Eddie, is a very comprehensive list of all the different people or ways to get angry.
Oh, yeah. And you think about it, it's true, isn't it?
It is.
That's right. I had no problem making myself angry yesterday just thinking about what these people did to me in the past.
And also, I mean, many times people will go, oh, no, I don't get angry unless someone's hurting someone I love.
That's right.
That seems to be the caveat.
Yeah, that's right. So let's, like I said, have a look at a couple of these mental factors, the first being aversion and then the second being anger, and you'll see how really closely related they are. So I put up this picture here because this picture is taken from a book, that book called Emotions Revealed. So all these emotions that he's put out reveal themselves on our face. And Paul Ekman mapped them. And he said, look, when a person feels aversion, this is the sort of thing that happens with the face. Nevertheless, here's the definition. It's a deluded mental factor that, referring to one of three objects, those three objects I talked about, oneself, our friends, or the support, you know, foes that support the people who are trying to harm us, or our friends, agitates the mind by being unable to bear or through wanting to harm the object or person. Anger is the English word that we use to describe this deluded mental factor, which has been described, which has different words, of course, in the Pali language and the Sanskrit language. In the Buddhist when the Buddha sees it, it can be easily translated across to be hate or anger, aversion. But what you should remember is the opposite of lust or desire. And sometimes when you read the text, you'll see it described as one of the threefold fires that have to be quenched, put out. So the other two fires, of course, are lust and ignorance. It's also described as a poison. It's also referred to as an unwholesome root. It's also one of the 14 unwholesome mental factors. Different Buddhist translators have call this, like I said, hatred. Others have called it anger. But if you look in the Pali tradition, there's quite a bit of difference between hatred and anger. Although we often come across it in the Buddhist text as anger, I think it's more closely hatred. So this, you know, so I've highlighted some of these words. So when we say deluded, so aversion is based on a distorted attention that exaggerates or projects defects onto people and things. So that's where it's deluded. So aversion has many forms, and several other afflictions are derived from it, including irritation, annoyance, frustration, anger, rebelliousness, belligerence, resentment, vengeance, spite, cruelty, violence, and jealousy. So like you said, like this is the root, and all these other things can come out of it. So this is anger. So anger is a little bit, and this is one of the ways that anger, the most obvious, but people can have very cold anger too. This is like hot, heated anger. But people can also display, like I said, cold, icy anger. And it's a little bit different than this. Nevertheless, what's anger? Once again, it's a deluded mental factor. Here's the wording's a little different. That observes a contaminated object, exaggerates its negative characteristics, considers it to be undesirable, then wishes to harm it. So you've got 5 sort of important aspects to this word called anger. And I'll just say a few things about each of these. So the stuff I've highlighted in red, so deluded, means mistaken or confused. The contaminated object means something that's fallible or imperfect within cyclic existence, ordinary.
And Eddie, for objects, you don't mean just things, do we?
No. So anything that's within cyclic existence. All of us, all persons, for instance. So like I said here, we're talking about it's the object is fallible, it's imperfect. So in here we could say like a car. Right? So you say the deluded mental fact that observes a contaminated object. So go, well, how come, what do you mean? What's a car contaminated with? You know, and it just here it could mean imperfect, fallible, ordinary, subject to causes and conditions that are beyond your control. No, meaning impermanent. Then it exaggerates, meaning a projection and exaggeration. This is undesirable. So this is this value judgment that sees no benefit in it. It's sort of useless and sort of harmful to us. So then we wish to harm it. So then we have retaliation, ill will, and revenge. Now, behind each episode of anger, there will be a story. A story made up by our own mind, in which we will impute motivations to people that they do not have. We'll interpret their actions from our own standpoint. And we will ignore or demean the concern of others. So anger is a mental state. It's not the behavior. Anger can also be a reaction to fear. So when fearful, we usually feel powerless. Whereas anger will give us a false sense of power, you know, by sending adrenaline sort of coursing through the body. Although anger may sometimes seem to make us courageous, Our behavior when angry seldom remedies the problem and often makes it worse. So this little quote here was taken from His Holiness the Dalai Lama, the book called Samsara and Nirvana. It's one of the books that I had up there. So this, I would suggest, is quite useful to remember, because many of us will have our own ideas of what anger is and how it's defined. But if we're like trying to practice the Dharma, being Buddhists, then I'd suggest we might need to change, you know, bring our ideas in line with what with the Buddha Dharma. This is how it's defined. And you can see, you know, there's a lot in it, isn't there? You know, this term deluded, contaminated object, exaggeration, undesirable, harm.
It's kind of like the formula in a way, because it's got how to undo the formula in the definition.
Yes, that's right, Rufus. That's what's so wonderful about, you know, the many of the definitions within Buddhism. You can sort of see how you come in, but you can also see how you go out. And this is just like the Four Noble Truths, right? You just, they name it, they describe it, but he also shows you the way out.
Martin's just made a comment that he often thinks of Basil from Fawlty Towers hitting his with a tree branch. And I just think of black books.
Yeah, well, that's right. They're very good instances, aren't they? Really great expressions of people becoming very irrational and angry.
In fact, many comedy shows have that, don't they? Even Malcolm in the Middle, and you know, of that total frustration.
Yeah, the meltdown.
The meltdown and the irrationality and ending up harming oneself, actually.
Yeah. So anger, of course, is a product. How do we know that? Because it's an effect. Right? So every effect has causes. And, you know, some of them are right in here, isn't it? The exaggeration that it is deluded. So that's got to do with ignorance. Considers to be undesirable, because it only sees the undesirable qualities. It doesn't see anything desirable at all. Then, of course, wishing to harm it. So anger has causes, and something happened to me quite a few years ago where I discovered for myself the cause of anger by first of all knowing what was not the cause of my anger. So at that time, Miffy asked me to do something that I didn't want to do, and I just thought, well, why do I have to do it? Why should I do that, you know? Anyway, I got worked up into a state, and so I went into my room, and I thought about what was happening, and all I could do, I knew I was really angry about this, but I also knew that it couldn't be Miffy making me angry. That would be impossible. It can't be something outside yourself that's causing you to be angry, because anger is a mental state. Its causes are mental, not something physical, not something outside your mind. That's an impossibility. And that just comes from the teachings of karmic cause and effect. Anything that happens, anything emotionally that happens to you, the causes for it are inside. You can have many conditions that support it from the outside, of course, like hearing unpleasant words or someone asking you to do something you don't want to do and all that sort of stuff. That's all true. But the actual causes are within your own mental continuum. If you can just take that home with you, that is so helpful. If that's the case, you will have great hesitancy in blaming someone else for your feelings and emotions. So, and this is how I found it. I found out later on when I worked it all out. Shanti Deva had written it, you know, 20, was it more than 1,000 years ago, 1,700 years ago, and put it in the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. And this is how he summed it up. Having found its fuel of discontent in the prevention of what I wish for and in the doing of what I do not want, hatred increases. and then destroys me. That's a fact.
That sounds so Shakespearean, doesn't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Shakespeare said something very similar to it. But this is true. And I would suggest just look back over your life and find the times when you became angry and see if this was not part of it. Somehow or other, what you were wishing for was prevented, or you had to do something that you did not want to do. So I'll read you a little from a couple of commentaries on the Bodhisattva's way of life, which relate to this verse. He says, everything that produces uncomfortable and unwanted situations, both for yourself and your sphere of interest, and everything that is a hindrance to getting what we want, all these produce a state of mental annoyance. And this is the fuel for anger and hatred. For just as it is food that makes the body grow, it is unhappiness of mind that gives rise to anger and resentment. And anger it is that lays in ruins every kind of mental goodness. Thus, it is essential to overcome such states of unhappiness, for they are the food on which our anger feeds. So I remember this. So all it was that I think this is the old centre study 20 years ago now. But if he asked me to go and take the rubbish out, so I didn't like that. I go, why don't you do it? This is my mind. Why don't you do it? You're standing right there. You see it. You don't need to go out. Why do I have to do it? So here we go in the doing of what I do not want. I just want to stay here. I just want to read my book. I'm being prevented from what I wish to do. So it can rise up in all sorts of different instances, putting the rubbish out, doing the dishes, doing the smallest things. But suddenly you're not getting what you want. You're not getting your way. So then resentment and belligerence is the fuel, and then off it goes. Then Venerable Thupten Chodron says in her commentary on this verse in Bodhisattva's Way of Life called A No Time to Lose, she says, what triggers our anger? According to Shantideva, it's getting what we don't want and not getting what we desire. So these two. When we're heavily invested in our likes and dislikes, tiny reactions can escalate into violence and war. When we're afraid of getting stuck with something we don't want or deprived of what we need, our thoughts come in as reinforcements and escalate our anger and pain. Full-blown destructive anger starts with an uncomfortable feeling that things aren't going our way. It's helpful to recognize this uneasiness before it escalates. If, however, we've already gotten angry, we can still try to find the patience to not act or speak. It's never too late to put an embargo on the fuel of misery. At any point in the process, we can pause and practice patience. So this is very true too, isn't it? I mean, if you find yourself in an argument and it's escalating and you can see where it's going, we can try and stop ourselves by just saying, stop. Look, I'm sorry, this is getting out of hand. Can we talk about this later? Some sort of thing we can interrupt it. Otherwise, it escalates and it could turn into actual verbal violence, physical violence, and of course, mental violence. So, you've got to also remember here that anger is not us. Right? It's just a dynamic energy. And if we don't identify with it, then the energy remains unfixated and free. But if it freezes into want and don't want, then you'll know the outcome.
Eddie, so Andrew's asking, if patience is the antidote for anger, then what's the antidote for impatience?
Patience.
So, I mean, there's quite a few things like impatience, frustration, they're all kind of edging towards blowing your top, but you haven't quite blown your top yet.
Yeah, that's right. So, it's a very simple things like breathe. Notice that what's going on here. Yeah, and take and go, oh, it's not them, it's not the words, it's not any of these things. You've got to try and, you can interrupt it, try to use reason yourself. If you can't reason, because it's, you know, because that's one of the things that anger does, it really compresses the mind, it shuts down your ability to reason. Then come back into the body and breathe. You know, what did our parents sometimes say? Count to three, count to ten.
Count to ten. Just count to
ten. Yeah, those sort of things. Those are very simple antidotes. Okay, so let's have a look. We're going to have a look now. So we've looked at what anger is and how it arises, some of the causes, like this, you know, discontent. Okay, now what are the, so now we're going to have a look at the faults of anger itself. So the first is this, and this is the one His Holiness the Dalai Lama always focuses on. You lose your ability to reason. It's very true.
And Eddie, that's probably why it makes such good comedy material.
That's right. Probably right. You're right. That's why we could laugh at others being completely unreasonable. This is something else you will destroy your relationships. You harm yourself and others. And this is another thing, you know, your friends fear you. People are afraid of angry people. And the other thing, so this is all stuff, you know, like we've got mental stuff, the first, losing ability to reason. Relationships are destroyed, that's inner, outer. Harm yourself and others, inner, outer. Friends fear you, that's outer. Poor health. So body and mind are basically ruined through anger. Now you have to also remember that, you know, anger is put into the category of a negative emotion. And negative emotions are completely natural. Now, although they're natural, they're still some of the most toxic emotions that we can have. So feelings of rage and hatred build up in the body and mind. They affect the body's organs and natural process and breed more negative emotions, leading to depression. Prolonged bouts of anger and negativity can take the toll on the body in the form of high blood pressure, stress, anxiety, headaches, and poor blood circulation. Research is also so that even one 5-minute episode of anger is so stressful that it can damage your immune system for more than 6 hours. That's massive, isn't it? 6 hours. That's 72 times the damage it does in the 5 minutes. Also lead to heart attacks and strokes. Another scientific study showed that the molecules accumulated and exhaled while you verbally express anger, hatred, or jealousy contain toxins, then that when collected for about an hour, are enough to kill 80 guinea pigs. Pretty outrageous, isn't it?
What?
So that's just in terms of this life, you know, and the physical stuff. In terms of Buddhism, that's it can even bring about rebirth in the hell realms. So it's not good, physical or mental. Miffy, you're saying?
The 6-hour thing, that was the immune system was compromised for that long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is pretty amazing, because like how you said, many times we'll say, yeah, but it's natural. But just
it
like
is natural.
You said, poison
there's
is
also natural poisonous plants, too, aren't there? Aren't there? There are many plants in nature that are poisonous.
Yeah.
And, you know, we wouldn't eat them knowing that they're poisonous. And there's even animals and insects that are in the natural world and are poisonous to human beings.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't, you know, put ourselves in the line of a cobra or a deadly spider or fish or something, would we?
The other thing that strikes me about this, Eddie, with recognizing the faults of anger, is a lot of this, you don't even need to be angry at somebody. You can just be generally angry, and it still destroys relationships, harms yourself.
Yeah, that's right. And this is what, you know, they said, the 10th one, irrational anger. Now, you may have too come across people that you know they're angry, and it's just like they give off this vibe, you just got a wall, like have nothing to do with them. Like for me, it's like, okay, keep your distance, don't say anything. Be really careful how you even look at them. Because these people like are in the, you know, are, man, are in the grip of anger. You know, so one time many years ago, we hadn't been home for so long. So my father was a man who was angry for many, many years. And, you know, so what happened, of course, he had 7 children. He ended up living by himself in the house. And one day my brother thought, I'll go over and see Dad, you know. So he went home, knocked on the back door, and the back door just flew open, and my father was standing there with a really red face, just going at him, right? And then he stopped. He said, I thought you were the Mormons. But like, he didn't even see who was on the other side of the door. He'd already made up his mind, and he was angry. Yeah. And you know, when I became a Buddhist, I sort of wrote back to him, and you know, sort of tried to thank him for everything that he had done for us and things like that. And he wrote me back this amazing letter, and in it he said, you know, I knew I was angry and I just could not stop it. I could not stop myself being angry. And you know, so he apologized to me for, you know, after I sort of complimented him on being a dad and not, you know, leaving us in the lurch and things, even though it was very difficult. Well, this is what he said, you know, I could not stop myself being angry. So, you know, we this generation, you know, people here are listening to this teaching and reading, we're really, really lucky, I think, because there are many people that don't know how to not be angry. There are many people who can't stop their anger. But we, having come to the teaching of the Buddha, have the methods. It's just mental training. And even just knowing the faults of anger, you know, it's like, you know, the fault of anger in my family was my father destroyed his relationship with every one of his kids, destroyed his relationship with our mother. And there are a lot of people who are afraid of it. And you couldn't reason with him when he was in that state. I mean, it just drove him nuts. So this is the case with many people. And so, yeah, this is one of the easiest things. This is what they often recommend. This is one of the simplest ways to prevent our own anger, is just to know the faults of it. And I've got one more slide to complement this one, which I'll bring up now. So here you can see a man who's being led away by the police in handcuffs. So I really like this, what I'm going to put up on the screen next, and it's this. The fault of anger is that all appearances arise as enemies. So remember when Corrie was here talking about anger, and that when a person is angry, you can't convince them through reason to stop being angry. There's a, what was that thing you called it?
When you're angry, then whatever someone says will just contribute to the anger.
Yeah.
Even if it's something to calm them down or is something to benefit them or any of those things, you cannot hear it because you're on tilt.
Yep, and it takes quite a how long there's a time period, wasn't there, that that person needed?
I can't remember.
And actually talk to them. I think it was like 10 minutes.
Yeah, it would be minimum 10, 15 minutes.
You've got to give it 10 minutes where you don't try and change their mind or do anything like that. Because in that period of time, every appearance arises as an enemy. It rises as something that supports their anger.
And that's that thing when people say the straw that broke the camel's back. It's usually some little tiny inconsequential thing, because all those appearances arise as the enemies. Just and you take them personally.
So in the sutra paths that most of us are probably a little familiar with. So this is the path that that I'm talking about now, based really on the teachings of the Buddha, the more common teachings of the Buddha. In those teachings, every instance of anger is seen to be based on distortion and therefore damaging. But in the tantric vehicle, the other teachings of the path that Buddha taught, anger can be used in the path. It's not so much anger, it's the energy of anger that can actually be used in the path. Right? But if you're not a good tantric practitioner, all you can really do is use the methods put forward in the vehicle of the sutras, the more common teachings of Buddha. But I just want you to know that, like I said on the very beginning, it really depends upon the context. Another quote by Arishanti Devi says, "Those tormented by the pain of anger never know tranquility of mind. Strangers they will be to every pleasure. They will neither sleep nor feel secure." So anybody who knows, who's been angry any time, you will know how difficult it is to go to sleep when you've had an event where you've been angry. You'll know how
Andrew's just anger deprives the
taste of food also.
Andrew just said that 5 minutes of anger usually results in at least 6 hours of lost sleep for him.
Right, okay. Yeah. There you go. So this is taken from some of my venerable Pema Chodron. She says, "When we're angry about something, most of us think about it feverishly. We can't sleep at night or find any peace of mind. There are various ways you can deal with this situation. The first thing you can do is to contact how anger feels in your body. We don't usually pay attention to the physical anguish that anger causes. Sensitizing yourself to that pain can motivate you to walk more eagerly with aggression. Another practice I can recommend is done during meditation. If you've been angry, you can intentionally replay the whole story. Pay attention to your feelings and thoughts. Are they obsessive and repetitive? Do they fuel your grudges or judgments? Then while breathing in and out gently, take the feeling of anger as the focus of your meditation. Give it your full attention without moving away from it by repressing it or acting it out. Try to experience the anger non-verbally by getting to know its qualities. Like, does it have any color? You know, sometimes you hear people say, they say, "I saw red." Is there a temperature? For some people, you got hot under the collar. Does anger itself have a taste or a smell? So this type of practice puts you in touch with your emotions directly, and it lessens the sense of struggle. You know, if you're just dealing with the thoughts of it, like I said, it's just repetitive. It goes round and round and round. It's a massive struggle. But if you can bring it down into the feeling of it and how it's affecting your senses, there's less struggle. There's just inquiry and noticing. So next thing, we've looked at what anger is, what causes it, what the faults are. So then we'll look at the next thing, is the benefits of overthrowing it. Your life will be in accord with reality. It's a wonderful thing. And this is what you find out when you got angry, it's like you lose your sense of reality. It's just completely out of it. An acceptance of karma. Being a victim, that type of mentality finishes, comes to an end. Hurt from grudges finishes. People trust you. And lastly, you have good health. So Lama Zopa Rinpoche, in his book, The Six Perfections, says, you know, the people who have harmed us are not the cause of our suffering. Controlled by delusion and karma, they were forced to do the actions that harmed us. When we understand karma, we can see that it is impossible to receive the result of something if we have not created the cause of it in the past. So we must have harmed that person or someone very much like them in some way previously to cause this situation to arise. We have abused them, and now the karma has returned and we are being abused. Whatever negative thing is happening to us at this moment can always be traced back to a similar negative action we did in the past. When we develop a deep understanding of karma, when we have complete conviction that those who harm us could not help harming us because of the previous karma we did them, they only become objects of compassion. We harmed them and now we're being paid back. We caused this, so how can we possibly become angry with them? From the same book, he says, whenever we face an angry person and have the opportunity to practice patience, then we should do it. To not practice patience while that person is there is to miss a great opportunity. This is true, isn't it? Because there's not many people that get angry with us. It happens so rarely. Just as we say an apple a day keeps the doctor away, we can say some patience a day keeps the lower realms away. That's how important it is in our life. And we should never miss the opportunity to practice it. We should persist, even if we often fail. And finally, he says, the number of enemies we have and the amount of harm we receive depend on the strength of our anger. Well, the number of enemies we have and the amount of harm we receive depend on the strength of our anger. When we are free from anger, we are free from enemies.
So, Eddie, is that in the short term as well as the long term? That... you know, the amount of harm that we receive or the enemies that we have?
If we need to be long term, it's got to have its moments in the short term. So if you can find any way not to be angry when someone is trying to harm you, it immediately has an effect on you. It can't affect you. It can't actually make you angry. But that's an immediate benefit. If you can keep doing it, then the benefit, of course, becomes longer and longer and longer. And what will happen in the end, especially with the acceptance of karma, you won't have enemies. The term enemies becomes sort of obsolete. So now we're going to have a look at some of the, so these are the benefits. There are many, many more, of course. But now I'd like to have a look at some of the antidotes to anger and hostility. And we're going to have a look at them from some Buddhist methodologies and also non-Buddhist ways of doing it. So antidotes for anger and hostility. First of all, contemplate the faults of anger. You know, we've looked at those, we end up with harming ourselves, others, poor health. We destroy our own kindness and compassion. If we've done something good and we haven't dedicated it yet, we destroy that merit. And of course, it's like opening a door to the lower realms. Because if we were to die in the moment of our anger, that's the direction we're going. So we should always contemplate the faults of anger. Recollect karma, just as Lama Zopa Rinpoche said. Meditate on the three types of patience. Some of us that meditate on the three types of patience, it means become familiar with the three types of patience. So that when you meet harm doers or difficult situations, you can be patient. Become familiar with loving kindness. Become familiar with the mind of enlightenment. Become familiar with emptiness and dependent arising. Now, so with anger is, like I said before, it was a deluded mental factor. So there's all that, but it's also adventitious. So that means, adventitious means, it only arises when the causes and conditions are present for it too. If they're not, it doesn't. So you'll find, you might be sitting there right now listening to me and you're not angry. You go like, so if I said to you, why aren't you angry? The simple answer would be, well, the cause and conditions for it haven't arisen. And that's what we mean by anger is adventitious. It only arises when the causes and conditions are there. Now, Lama Zopa Rinpoche said something really interesting about this. He said, so we have the cause for it, the deepest cause we have it. And it's, what do you call it? It's just non-manifest. It hasn't met the right conditions yet. So on one side, we have the cause for it, but we haven't run into the conditions yet. So that's one reason why anger is present, but also why it's adventitious. Another reason is that when anger arises, we forget that we actually have antidotes. So then we become angry. So if we can remember that we have antidotes to anger, like we have the faults, that's one of the antidotes. We also have all these other things here. Familiarity with emptiness, dependent arising, familiarity with bodhicitta, love, three types of patience, and karma. So when something is adventitious, depending upon cause and conditions, that means it's not an intrinsic part of the mind. It's not rooted in the mind. It's not the nature, it's not one of the deepest natures of mind. So anger has never penetrated the clear and cognizant nature of the mind. It is rooted in a distorted conception, distorted conceptions, distorted thought, distorted idea. So if our thoughts were not distorted, we wouldn't have anger. Not only that, but anger can't actually stand up to powerful states of mind that understand reality, because anger is a distorted mind. It's a distorted conception. It's a wrong idea, wrong. It's just wrong, even though it's natural. But it can't stand up to the truth, and so therefore it can be eliminated. So now there's a couple of other techniques we can use for as antidotes against anger. The one is called the technique called RAIN. So RAIN is this acronym. And the first part gets us, so in other words, R stands for recognize what you're feeling. what you're thinking, what it's caused. So in this case, you could recognize this is frustration, and if I keep focusing on it, I'm going to become angry. I need to know what I'm feeling. Anger has a feeling tone to it. You know, so become really familiar with the definition and so forth, and the feeling that's imputed to, this mental state that's imputed to, you'll know, oh, this is anger. So you have to recognize it and name it. You have to accept that you're actually experiencing feelings of frustration, vulnerability, helplessness, or fear with what you're calling anger. Then I stands for inquire or investigate. So you can ask, is it true? Is it true what my mind is telling me about the situation, the event? Is it true that what I'm feeling is for these reasons? Then, but where is it? Where is the anger? Is it my body? Is it in my mind? Whose is it? Is it mine? Who would I be without the thought or the feeling? Who am I with it? What's it like to feel anger? What's it like to live with it? What would it be like to live without it? How else might I respond? Instead of being angry, I'm feeling angry, but do I have to respond with anger? Now, what does it mean? So you've got all these questions you can ask. So inquiring into the nature of anger. And the N stands for non-attachment. It's not you. You know, when you say it's an angry person. No, this is a person who's experiencing anger. They have anger, but it's not them. You are not like an, don't think you're ever an angry person. So it's not me. Then it's not mine. Who could I be? Who would I be without anger? So you've got to let go of the clinging to it as being yours. You could also practice Tong Len, love and kindness, that sort of thing. So this is one technique you can use called the rain technique. And I forget the author who's very, Tara Branch, I think. Tara Brach is a Buddhist practitioner who put together this technique. And she's on YouTube. He's written a number of books about using this technique. It's very successful. So recognize it, accept that you're feeling it, inquire into its nature, and then non-attachment, non-clinging. Secondly, we have another practice called the seven-step method. This is by a man called Ron Liefer from a book called The Happiness Project. So the first thing he says, first of all, take responsibility. Don't blame anyone or anything else when you feel anger. Become aware that you're actually experiencing anger by reflecting on the causes and how they relate to the situation. So one of the causes you must remember is that the deepest causes on your own mind stream. Anything external to you is a condition. Try to understand anger. So we've got taking responsibility, becoming aware, then understand anger. What's happening here is I'm not getting what I want, or I am being separated from something that I really want. I'm not getting what I would like, that sort of thing. Try to become familiar with the dynamics of anger. Then reflection is the fourth one. Becoming fully aware of the feelings of frustration, vulnerability, and so forth. So you have to be sort of open to your experience before you can heal it. And that leads to the fifth step, making the decision to commit yourself to not act it out or repress it. Your decision will be, I'll find alternatives. The sixth step is to relax. So come back into the body, check your breathing, breathe normally and naturally, turn down the fight-flight response by relaxing the body and mind. And the last one is what he calls an opening. So an opening meaning you can be patient, or you could practice Tong Len. or it's not me, not mine. And yeah, when I talked in the beginning of this class about the two Buddhist psychologists, they also had many other techniques that you can use to oppose anger. So the methods are there. So one more slide about this, so opposing anger. So develop the view of genuine happiness. So I took this out of a couple of Dharma students who've come here as teachers, Glenn Svensson and what's our friend's name?
Corey.
And Corey Jackson. So what I said about developing the view of genuine happiness means you have to come to the conclusion that your happiness and your suffering are dependent upon your own mind. It's got very, very little to do with anything to do with your senses and anything external to you. So the deepest causes of your genuine happiness have to come from within you. This is also true for your deepest suffering. It's arising from within you. So don't go blaming the world or anything else external to yourself. That's the first thing. Then apply what you remember. This is called your mindfulness. What are the faults of anger? Could I use the RAIN technique? Could I use the 7 steps? Could I use this? Could I use that?
Eddie, can you just go through those 7 steps again? Because we missed writing down a couple.
Because the first is to take responsibility. The second was becoming aware. The third was to understand anger. The fourth was reflection. The fifth was decision. The sixth step was relaxation. And the seventh was opening.
Great, thank you.
Okay.
And this one here of opposing anger, that really, the most difficult thing seems to be to remember to do it when anger is starting to arise, because there's something very addictive about being anger. You feel you're right and you just want to express it and make people know how you feel and all of this stuff. It's over.
So when all these, like you're saying, so these things all come up, one really simple way to challenge that is just to ask yourself, is it true? So your anger is going to arise on thoughts, on a story that you're telling yourself about the event. You have to ask, interrupt it by going, is it true?
So Andrew has a question here that when he's angry, he's tried Tonglen but found it way too hard when the event is recent. Or can only use it, after some time has passed. Sure. So is there a better method you could use when you're still feeling pretty raw?
Well, then you've got to come to, I've got a slide coming up a little bit about later. So just hold on to that one and we'll come to it. Apply what you remember, the techniques, in other words, mindfulness. Understand the faults. So if you ask yourself, is it true about your own thinking? And then the next thing, quickly grab onto, you have to go, well, I don't know. I can be absolutely sure that what you're thinking is true. So you get another gap in there. Then go, the faults of anger. So even just putting in that type of thinking, you can't be angry while you put those thoughts in there. They go against anger. They become inquiries. Anger's already made up its mind about the object. It has its story, but you've interrupted the story. It's a bit like, if you're reading a scary story to your grandchild, or you were a child and somebody's reading a story to you, and then they said to you, I don't worry, it's not true. It's like, the story's not true. Yeah, you've got your story, it started or it's going on, and you're getting this emotional response. You've got to go, is it true? Can I be absolutely certain that what I'm thinking about in this situation is true? yeah, you're going to get, we'll go, well, no. Now, it's no use getting angry because these are all the faults of anger. And one of the, you know, the faults, one of the greatest faults of anger you should realize is anger hurts you. That is for certain. So, you know, you can just, oh, no, don't get angry here then. Anger is going to hurt me. It's going to hurt my relationship with the person I'm with here. What are the benefits here? So, look, I said, apply the antidotes. Question your beliefs. Ask yourself, is it true? And then bring in other antidotes. Now, Geshe Langri Tangpa said, when I encounter beings of unpleasant character and those oppressed by intense negative karma and suffering, as though finding a treasure of precious jewels, I'll train myself to cherish them, for they are so rarely found. So this is verse 4. Now we come to the commentary on the 8 verses. So beings of unpleasant character. This refers to those who, not having accumulated merit in the past, experience the arising of afflictions without even a trace of control, like my poor dad. It also refers to beings such as an ill-tempered person who, while crossing a mountain pass, was given a plate of meat stew. But when the food burned his lips, he tossed the full plate away along with the pan and then bellowed out, "You dare burn me?" So, I mean, we all do things like that, don't we?
I'm sure I've seen that in a movie somewhere.
That's right. You've seen plenty of movies. Intense negative karma refers to, you know, the 5 heinous crimes. So people have done, we all have throughout countless lives, negative things like being angry, and it will come back to bite us. That's just the nature of it. That's karma. So when it says those oppressed by intense suffering. So here it's referring to people who might be experiencing great sickness, illness, and so forth. So it can be very, like, you know, you see in the supermarkets, right? When COVID-19 was, you know, much more prevalent, people were getting really angry in the shops, attacking people for having all the toilet paper, fighting in there. So these people, this is those oppressed by intense suffering. So the line says, I will train myself to cherish them, for they so are rarely found. So since it is very rare to find a precious gem, a precious jewel, you know, you don't discard it. You know, you keep it close to you and you cherish it. So it's saying here, so it's the same way with beings of unpleasant character. You don't find them every day. You don't run into them every day. It's unusual to. They're not easy to find. Yet in dependence upon them, our compassion could arise for them. And in dependence upon compassion, the awakening mind, bodhicitta, can arise. So without making any deliberate efforts, you know, it's rare to sort of find people who have unpleasant character and are angry. So when we do, we should hold them really close and treasure the opportunity that they give us. Because it's independent upon people with unpleasant character, we can become enlightened, closer to enlightenment all the time. They're part of our path. So we don't want to blow the situation when we meet up with them. So those oppressed by suffering, picture of one, stop seeing this as wrong. Right? See it as something valuable.
Oh, What do you mean seeing it as wrong, seeing the suffering as wrong or the person as wrong?
Okay, so, you know, at the moment, you know, most of us get really upset with political situations, with politicians, you know, policemen shooting children and, you know, there's all sorts of things we can see in the world and go, this is wrong. So how many of you in my class here agree this is wrong, that all these things are happening?
Well, I wonder, no one else has put anything in yet, but...
Would you all agree that it's wrong or is it not wrong?
Well, I would say it's wrong.
Yeah, okay. So we take the view it's wrong. So what happens when we take that view that it's wrong?
We get upset.
Yep, that's one of the things that happens, isn't it? We speak badly about it. Our mind gets agitated, all that sort of thing.
We blame is the other thing too.
The other thing comes is blame, isn't it? But see, what I think then, if there's what, you know, I do this myself, of course, but seeing this now, I think actually it's not wrong at all. Why is it not wrong? It's just cause and effect, karmic cause and effect. When people hurt other people, it's the display of karma. This is, you know, this is how it works. There's nothing wrong about it. So from our perspective, when you see that, it's like, you know, so there's things you can do here, isn't there? It's really valuable that this takes place. Why? Because we could actually try to stop it. We try to stop these people harming themselves through these unskillful actions. And so we can develop ourselves and by doing so have an influence on other people too.
That is like an emotional magic trick because it stops you blaming and makes you suddenly go, well, I have to take responsibility and do something here.
Yeah, it does. That's right. And you've got responsibility in two ways. One is to yourself. You can't, if you start seeing this as wrong and putting blame and all those sort of things, then you're hurting yourself. You're harming yourself. So that goes completely against the Buddhist teachings. Now, the Buddhist teachings are the basic ethical stances, non-harm, do no harm. So if we criticize, if we blame, we harm ourselves. But we don't do anything to the situation either. It doesn't help at all. So that's one thing. But then the other is that if we don't do something to remedy the situation also, we're not taking responsibility. Now, if we can, then we should. If we can't, well, that's a different story. But one of the things we can do is not oppress ourselves by the suffering, right? From that, we can develop from our own side, you know, a sense of compassion, kindness and so forth. We might even get involved in social justice issues. But we have to always remember karmic cause and effect, and then from that basis, develop greater compassion and kindness. Okay, we've only got a few minutes left, so I'm going to keep going. This is from Dhamma Rakshita from this Wheel of Sharp Weapons. Depressed and forlorn when we feel mental anguish, this is the wheel of sharp weapons returning full circle upon us from wrongs we have done. Till now, we have deeply disturbed minds of others. Hereafter, let's take on this suffering ourselves. So what's being said here is, in brief, you know, when we meditate or when we have time just to contemplate, we should try to think of a situation in which we've experienced great mental suffering, then contemplate this verse or this one. When my mind falls prey to suffering, It's the weapon of destructive karma turning upon me for causing turbulence in the hearts of others. From now on, I will take all suffering upon myself. So this means accept your mental discomfort by linking it to the self-centered attitude and make a strong determination to not deliberately cause turmoil in others' minds and hearts. Then do the taking and giving meditation. At the conclusion, rest your mind in a peaceful state. We have these sort of things happen. The situation is a result of my negative karma. As the result has already ripened, it's too late to purify it. There is nothing to do but accept the situation patiently with a happy mind. I myself created the cause for this problem, and so it is my responsibility to accept the result. And here's the kicker. If I do not experience the results of my negative actions, who else will? So who was the student, honey, that asked the question before us? I've got a slide about that coming up.
It was Andrew.
Andrew.
And it was about the Tonglen and it.
Yeah.
The roar at the beginning.
Yeah. So maybe you should just wait a bit about the Tonglen business and, you know, use something like this type of thinking first. But I'm, you know, like I say, if I'm experiencing the results of my own negative actions, there's nobody else who can do that. Only me. Then if you have enough courage and fortitude, you could say, well, then let this feeling, this experience of pain and suffering that I'm going through now, let be the basis or a platform that can support the suffering of every other person who feels just like me. Then breathe it in. And you know, place it on the self-cherishing or the indifference that you felt towards others, and then breathe out the kindness. So this is something to remember about ourselves, right? So if we are unenlightened people, then we're not quite right. And being not quite right, if we do not accept suffering and expect only happiness with our enjoyments, will only heap more misery upon ourselves. No, we're suffering because we are not quite right. And being not quite right is the creation of the impure mind of self-grasping ignorance. In other words, we believe our thoughts to be true.
So Eddie, this one, it's a whole different approach to how, you know, people often will say you've just got to lower your expectations, but often when you lower your expectations, everything falls down, your aspirations, everything. But this is like lowering your expectations while still having that reality of the clarity of mind. And
because of like having expectations, you're out of reality. You're not really dealing with reality. You're not in reality. Now the Buddha Dharma is dealing with reality, the way it is, the way enlightened beings have seen it, the way the Aryas have seen it. That's the reality. But so others, of course, ordinary people, that's not what they see. Like you said before, they have expectations. And you know, they think these expectations, and like I said, they think them to be true, real.
So then this way we can lower or release our expectations, but still have that aspiration for liberation or enlightenment, helping others.
Yeah, and you know, be realistic about it. So we're around 8:30, so I'll have to hurry, folks. I'm sorry. But here's the three types of patience. So non-retaliation to those who harm, towards the inanimate, and voluntary acceptance.
you might have to say something about those three.
So Ron Leifer said, so this is from an article, Buddhist Conceptualization and Treatment of Anger. He says, experiencing without anger or aggression, the pain of frustration, anxiety and helplessness that come from not getting what we want when we want it, and of getting what we don't want when we don't want it. You know, the practice of patience means enduring the unwanted without aggression. That's the first one, right? Non-retaliation towards those who harm. As we open to the unwanted, the insistent energy of selfish desire weakens. Tolerance for the dissatisfactions and frustrations of life is strengthened. And this can be towards the inanimate and towards the animate. And the vulnerability to anger and aggression is reduced. So we have beings who harm us. We are to not retaliate with aggression to them. We have the weather that harms us, the heat, fires, floods, things that break. And then we become impatient with them and angry. So, the voluntary acceptance that people will try to harm us because they're in the grips of karma and delusion. The inanimate objects break because they're all impermanent. They're subject to causes and conditions that are beyond our control. So we have to accept this. But, I think for most of us, myself included, we forget. We forget that human beings in particular, nearly any living being with a mind, is under the control of karma and delusion. So that's what's doing the harm. They're under that control. But we retaliate against the persons or the animals. We harm them. So they say, look, don't harm the person or the animal. They're not to be harmed. If there's anything that we should be harming, it's our own anger. It's our own selfishness. That needs to be brought to an end. We should have patience towards the inanimate objects because they are also not under their own control. They're under the control of their causes and conditions, which are impermanent. So they are all subject to change and disintegration and the uncertainties. And we need to voluntarily accept this because it is the reality. It's the nature. So in relationship to this brief meditation, we remind ourselves, the person who is harming or disturbing me is in reality encouraging me to practice patience. That's just thought transformation here. They're not trying to encourage you to be angry. that's your own disturbing emotions will do that. We need to see them as friends who are encouraging us to practice patience. Not as enemies, but friends. Like teachers encouraging us. It's impossible to make progress on the spiritual path without developing the strong mind of patience. They have great benefit to me. So in other words, we've got to balance our compassion with wisdom, seek a balance between the short and the long term, and take time out to recover your strength and collect your thoughts and to see things within the perspective of the Dharma. Like this idea here, Don't think that they're trying to harm us. Think that actually they're getting me to practice patience. And gee, that's great because so few people do that with me. Hardly anyone works with me to develop my patience. Wow, if I could become a patient person, I'd have no enemies. My health would be fantastic. People would really like me. People would not be afraid of me. So this fourth verse in summary is an extension and deepening of compassion by like holding these difficult people dearly. We're holding, they are dear to us because they are helping us develop patience, and patience is a necessary requisite of the spiritual path. And without patience, we cannot become enlightened. So this person is as dear to me as a precious gem. It also shows with it, you know, the disadvantages of anger, the faults, the antidotes to it, and that they are, as we said, like, as a treasure trove. So there are many great benefits of cherishing the harm doer. For instance, we could develop empathy towards them, compassion towards them, and patience. And this is all related to the practice of joyous effort. So, you know, I think for most of us, our effort of being patient is not very joyous, right? Because I think, you know, we haven't familiarized ourselves yet with the idea that a person who's actually trying to harm us, or somebody we hold dear, or encouraging foes to hurt us or our dear ones, is so unusual that we should have a sense of joy about it, because we rarely run into these people. And we should be joyous about it because they are giving us the chance to develop our empathy, compassion, and patience, which brings us closer to being highly regarded people in the world and, you know, again, enlightened. So in summary, we looked at these things. Anger and its faults, the antidotes for anger, and verse 4, which is the deepening and extension of compassion by cherishing difficult people. So we've come to the end of the class, I'm only a few minutes over now. You have any questions at all, Miffy?
No, there wasn't anything that's... no questions. People put a lot of answers into when you were asking the class, but there's no questions outstanding.
Yeah. So you can see, I mean, in this presentation tonight, I think there's a lot to think about and there's a lot to study.
It's a very different. It's like shifting our paradigm, isn't it? It's a complete.
Yeah, that's right.
Approach to a problem, even like saying with enthusiastic perseverance, like often people will say they like a challenge, but yeah. And like with this, it's like a problem. I can just see the possibility of going, oh, goody, goody, I can get my teeth into this.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think when you review this material, like relate it back to yourself and just ask yourself, like, whenever you've been angry, what's happened? How have others responded to you? How have you felt yourself? So you'll see from that perspective, there's many faults from being angry yourself. But if you're in the company of somebody else who's angry, there's great benefit for you. If you can recollect karma, patience, compassion, and a sense of joy that, oh, at long last, I'm in front of somebody who's actually angry, and now I can be patient. I can bear it. I can listen to them. Perhaps I can even help them. Or I better remember, though, many times, you know, when people are in the grip of anger, everything appears to them to support their anger. So I better be careful about how I apply my care and concern. Perhaps sometimes it's best just to ask them would they like a cup of tea? You know, or say, wow, I can see you. This is really upsetting for you. Please sit down. Because you'll find that most people, when they get angry, they're not angry sitting down. What they do is they often stand up. And so if you can push them down, it lowers the energy of the anger. And if you find yourself angry, it's a good thing to do yourself. Sit down. But anger pushes you up and you have to express the heat of it. And it often comes out of your mouth and your hands will clench and you'll lean forward, you'll lean into it. The simple thing is to, like I said, sit down. And if you're with somebody who's angry, what you could do is slow your own breathing rate down. Right? Because that can have an influence so that the other person's breathing could be mirrored. Cup of water, glass of tea, cup of water, whatever. Just sit them down. Don't try and change their mind at all. You know, let them do their venting. You be patient. You want to help. That's all good. Sometimes even if you can't help, just to be in their presence and accept their outburst is a big deal for someone else. Okay, so finally, if you have access to the website in the members area, have a look at some of this material. We've got pages 8 and 9. This is verse 4 and is a commentary on it, Transforming Problems of PMT. Pages 1 to 3, Transforming Problems, Lama Zopa Rinpoche. Pages 1 to 5, the Transforming Problems Mind Maps. Now this is tremendous, these mind maps, folks. There's lots of solutions for being angry. They've all come from Thupten Chodron's book on anger. Then there's an article by Khyentse Rinpoche, Geshe Thashi Seri, showing how attachment can lead to anger. A great problem of being attached to things, overestimating the good qualities, and suddenly you get disappointed, turns into anger. And next week we'll look at transforming problems again, and have a look at verse 5. Extending and deepening love. So I'm going to dedicate now if there's no other questions.
Yep.
So thank you all for being here, for listening, to be interested in the Dharma that's been passed down from the Buddha, the lineages. So for all of our students and the visitors to the center, in fact, for all living beings, and for the good health and long lives of our teachers, I want to dedicate, just as the great Bodhisattvas Manjushri and Samanta Bhadra did, by dedicating these merits created by ourselves, the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and sentient beings, are like a dream or an illusion existing in mere name. May we, who are like a dream and an illusion existing in mere name, attain mere enlightenment, which is like a dream. And lead all these dream-like sentient beings who exist in mere name to that enlightenment which exists in name only by ourselves alone. It's like a dream or illusion, exists in mere name. So thank you, everybody. I hope you've got something useful from it, and